Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from Edvest and You, a loan product of the NEEF Network, a local nonprofit agency providing college student loans and student loan refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. On July 1st, the moratorium on evictions related to COVID-19 in New Hampshire expired. But at the same time, Governor Sununu allocated $35 million federal dollars to help people pay for housing and utilities. Today in The Exchange, we examine how the economic fallout from the pandemic has affected our state's already strained affordable housing market. Also, what options exist for landlords and tenants during this time. And Exchange listeners, we'd really like to hear from you. Are you having trouble paying rent, mortgage, or utilities? Are you afraid of getting evicted? Landlords, we want to hear from you too. What are your questions and concerns as the state enters this next phase on rental policy? Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have several guests joining us this hour. We're going to begin with Luther Kinney, Director of Property Management for AHEAD, an affordable housing agency in Littleton. Also, Alyssa Margolin, Director of Housing Action NH. And welcome, both of you. Alyssa, I'll start with you. As you know already, our state has had a serious shortage of affordable housing for a long time, well before the pandemic. Alyssa, just connect the dots, though, on this, please. How this health crisis we're living in now and the economic fallout has exacerbated the housing problem.
Sure. Good morning, Laura, and thank you for covering this important issue again on your show. New Hampshire, unfortunately, was in a pretty vulnerable position in the housing market before the pandemic hit. Almost half of our renter population, so 48% of New Hampshire residents who rent their homes, were paying too much for their homes, more than they could afford. So if we think that 30% is considered affordable for most people of their monthly income towards housing costs, just under half of our renter population was paying more than 30%, and usually closer to 50 or 60%. And in some cases, for folks who earn lower incomes, they were paying a lot of their monthly income towards housing costs. So when the pandemic hit, and a lot of folks face COVID-related job loss, it became harder and harder to make that rent payment.
So I'm glad you started out with that definition, Alyssa. So in general, the standard definition of affordable housing is it costs 30% of your income. Once it gets much more above that, you're really going to struggle to pay for housing and other things like food and medication and childcare.
Correct. It's a balance. And the more you pay for housing, the less you have for other essentials and the less you have to invest in your local economy.
So, Luther, you're a property manager, as I said, for income-based housing in Littleton. What's your take on this?
To expand on what Alyssa said, you know, the typical income in our workforce housing for a household is $24,000 to $55,000 per year, you know, when you talk about the affordability, none of our tenants are paying more than 40% of their rent, of their income toward rent. But on those incomes, that still can be a struggle.
What have you seen in terms of people's incomes in Littleton, Luther? From what I understand, your area has a lot of tourism jobs. So what's going on there?
Well, up until March, our economy was quite strong. We were doing really well. In the couple weeks after the shutdown happened in March, 24% of our tenants reported that their household lost their income, lost their jobs. Wow. And as of the end of April, 30% of our tenants were delinquent, over 30 days delinquent in paying rent.
And again, you're sort of a different animal, Luther. It's your goal to provide affordable housing for people. So when that large a number of tenants can't afford rent, what do you do? Because again, you're not a typical landlord.
Well, that, you know, to put that in perspective, we typically budget for around a 3% collection loss. So while at our peak, we were at 28%, that's now fallen. It's improved greatly to around 18%. That is still catastrophic for us. So certainly things like the federal tax refund that people were receiving and the unemployment benefit that people received, that went a long way for them to be able to catch up on rent, which was huge for us because as an organization, we can't sustain those types of losses, obviously.
So if you have too many people who can't pay rent, that hits you guys really hard, and then you just can't do what you're supposed to do, provide affordable housing for people in the North Country.
Correct. I mean, obviously as an organization, we have a line of credit with our local bank, things like that, but we've had to really tighten our belt. We've canceled all non-essential maintenance and, you know, really tried to make sure we're paying attention to doing what we need to do.
Oh, that's interesting. What does that mean? Non-essential maintenance, like not painting. The paint doesn't look great, but we're just going to leave it for now.
Yeah, I mean, we have regularly scheduled capital improvement projects for all of our properties. And so things like, as you said, painting or electrical upgrades, roofs, things like that. So, you know, we had several hundred thousand dollars worth of work across our portfolio that has been permanently delayed.
Wow. I want to ask both of you about the moratorium that just expired. And Alyssa, just remind us, because we talked about this a couple months ago, you and I, what was the intended effect of the moratorium that the governor put in place in March? And did it work, Alyssa?
Yes, as you know, we were all given a stay-at-home order, and we were given that in order to follow, you know, good public health protocols and to stop the spread of COVID-19 around our state. So if the eviction moratorium was there to put in place so you have a home to stay at home in, you can't stay 6 feet away and you can't create that necessary stability if you have a surge in evictions, you know, and the economic crisis that went along with the stay at home order could exacerbate evictions at that time. So at the state level, we had an eviction moratorium that expired on July 1. And any landlord or property owner with a federally backed mortgage actually has to follow the federal moratorium, which expires, I believe, July 24th.
So did the moratorium work, Alyssa? Did it pretty much keep everybody in some kind of housing?
I think for the most part, it did. I think, you know, there are always stories about situations where folks were pursuing evictions outside of their legal right to do so. And there were moments where people living in places like rooming houses where they don't currently have rights of tenancy were displaced. But for the most part, the eviction moratorium did what it was intended to do and created some stability during the time of crisis.
And Alyssa, what was the impact of the moratorium overall? You know, now that it's been lifted, we can look back. What was the impact of it on landlords? Because I think the last time you and I talked about this, we did hear from several landlords who were worried that this would just get people, you know, give people an excuse not to pay, and that then landlords would struggle to meet both their property taxes and their own mortgages.
I think that's an excellent point. As Luther was just articulating, the rents are required in order to keep the buildings going. And so, you know, this is a system that very much relies on each other. Property owners need to make mortgage payments, they need to pay property taxes. And allowances were made on that side of the equation as well during the moratoria. So, but what could have happened also during that time? I mean, I think in some cases you saw landlords really working in partnership with tenants who were hit hard and creating payment plans, and in some cases property managers finding themselves becoming social workers and connecting tenants to food banks and some of the new relief programs that the governor's office for emergency relief and recovery were rolling out. But in other cases, it did create kind of a pent-up demand for eviction. And I think that's the concern now as the moratoria expire, that is kind of everything expiring at once, because you have the enhanced unemployment benefit expiring, and you have this pent-up demand for eviction and the courts reopening. And that's why it's so important that we finally have this New Hampshire Housing Relief Program, so that there's a way to address the problems before we end up with an evictions crisis.
Right. And we'll definitely talk about that in a moment, that $35 million that's coming in. But to you also, Luther, I'm interested in your thoughts as a landlord. According to press reports anyway, this spring, it seemed like most tenants were able to continue paying rent thanks to extended unemployment insurance, federal stimulus checks. Now that some of that income support is going away, Luther, what do you think is going to happen among your tenants?
Well, that's a good question for us, you know, to see what's going to happen. I mean, we're just coming into the rental assistance program, and as that's going to unroll in July and August. So we're hoping that's going to at least get us through the summer and the tenants. I think, you know, a lot of the big question we have is, how, you know, what's going to happen with the economy, and will people be, you know, people are starting to go back to work now as things have opened up. Is that going to be a permanent transition, or are we going to be looking at another round of shutdown? There's still a lot that we don't know.
Yes, that does seem to be the word or the theme for the past couple months. There is a lot we don't know. And you're right, Luther, some states that opened up earlier than New Hampshire are now having to shut pieces of their economy down because of a spike in COVID-19 cases. Well, as we said earlier, the moratorium is now lifted, and we're looking ahead to what that might mean, and also some of the new federal money that will be coming in to help landlords and tenants afford rent. I want to invite our listeners again to join us. Our number here in the Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also use Facebook. One more time, that email, exchange@nhpr.org. If you're a landlord, what questions or concerns do you have now that the moratorium has been lifted, and about the new housing assistance? And if you're a renter and you're struggling to make rent, or you're worried about utilities, of course, we want to hear from you too. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. And I want to bring in two other guests to our conversation. Elliot Berry is with us. He's managing attorney with New Hampshire Legal Assistance and co-director of its Housing Justice Project. Also, John Manning, executive director of Southwestern Community Services in Keene, one of the state's community action agencies that's handling this new funding that we're going to talk about. Thanks to both of you for being with us. And Elliot, I want to start with you. Now that this moratorium on evictions has just been lifted, as we've been saying, as of July 1st, what's changed, Elliot, if anything yet? Or is it too early?
Largely, Laura, it's too early. And a couple of points that are really important. This federal moratorium on evictions for non-payment of rent that Alyssa referred to a few moments ago, that doesn't expire until July 25th, and it is very sweeping. Any landlord who has any kind of federal subsidy, a tenant who has a Section 8 portable voucher, any landlord who has a federally backed mortgage, be it Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Ginnie Mae, all of those are covered by the moratorium. And again, so it is just non-payment of rent cases where they still can't go forward. But that's a lot of property. Where there is no federal involvement at all, we are seeing the courts starting to schedule eviction hearings. And as far as I can tell right now, it appears to be cases where that were filed before the moratorium went into effect. So I think the priority cases right now are the backlog, but we shall see.
Well, and as we again jump into this new money to help renters and landlords, again, I want to remind our listeners that our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. And Diane writes in from Laconia. And Alyssa, I'm going to throw this to you. Diane says, isn't that 30% of housing cost to income ratio supposed to include utilities and heating, or at least historically before the current housing crunch? Diane, thank you for that specific point, because sometimes when you rent, you discover that maybe the rent doesn't seem too bad, but the utilities are high. So just to put a fine point on it, Alyssa, what does that 30% include?
I think Diane makes a really good point. And in addition to the 30% encompassing utilities, there are other barriers to accessing affordable rental housing, like rental deposits, coming up with that first month's rent and a security deposit, and moving costs. And there are a lot of costs associated with housing instability. So Diane makes a good point.
Diane, thank you for writing in. And John, I want to turn to you. So let's tackle this $35 million that the governor has designated for housing assistance, including, as Diane asks, rent, utilities that people can apply for through their local community action agency. And of course, as I said, you're the head of the community action agency in Keene that covers the southwestern part of the state. Before we get to the $35 million though, John, in non-pandemic times, what are you guys doing on the housing front?
Well, Laura, I think all the community action agencies in New Hampshire pre-COVID would be providing, many of us have housing projects like Luther does, affordable housing projects. We provide assistance, fuel assistance, weatherization assistance to tenants so that their costs of their housing is less. We also in our area run the shelters. So we've been involved with housing folks from the beginning, and what we've seen now with what's happening is just a change for the worse, more people needing assistance. I think that's one of the keys with this program is we're going to be seeing people that have never come to a community action agency before because they've never needed assistance.
And can someone right now, John, quote unquote, come to a community action agency? I've seen a lot of advice to folks who are struggling. Go to your community action agency, fill out an application for assistance. Can people physically do that right now, John?
No, I yes is the bottom line answer. The program is set up so that they can go to a website, capnh.org, capnh.org. They choose what community action agency covers their region. They can click on that, will bring them to a form that they can submit looking for information, and then go through the application process online, working with a staff member from the community action agency. So we're trying to get it so that many people will be able to go through the whole process online and not have to come and see anybody. For folks that don't have access to computers or the internet, we can work it out where folks can do a paper application working with a staff person. All the community action agencies are currently still closed to the public. But if you need to come and see somebody, they can call, set up an appointment where we can set a meeting, a safe meeting to help them prepare their application if necessary.
So the $35 million, what is your role in this, John, as a community action agency?
Well, the $35 million, the goal is to be able to assist people with back housing costs, whether it's rent in arrears, mortgage payment, other costs, other utility costs of housing, so that they can remain in their housing. The basic rules are, first of all, it's important to note there is no income limit. So we can help anybody who finds themselves in a situation of difficulty because of COVID. This money must be tied into an issue that was caused by COVID. But there is no income limit. We can assist with back rent. Any costs that were incurred from April 1st through December 30th, we can assist with. And the other point to make is that the funding cannot be paid to the applicant, to the tenant. It must be paid to a third-party vendor, so either the landlord or the utility company or the mortgage company.
We're not going
to the individual.
You know, Luther, I want to ask you, as a property manager, I'm assuming you have tenants applying for this assistance? What's been hard for you and others in your field, Luther, to figure this out? How complicated is this program? Or maybe it's not complicated.
Well, it's a great question. We're still trying to figure out and learn the details of this program because it is so new. But we have a long relationship working with the CAP agency. Tri-County CAP is here in Littleton and Berlin that we work with. And we're familiar with working with the existing programs that were mentioned. I mean, there's heating fuel assistance payments. CAP also helps with security deposit guarantees. And there's also homeless prevention money that goes as direct rent payments to the landlord. So, you know, our history of working with the CAP agencies as a landlord is it's very easy. The tenant does actually most of the work in the verification process. And for the landlord, it's really about, you know, signing off on some of the verification forms and getting registered as a vendor with the CAP agency.
So it hasn't been too complicated for you from the landlord perspective, Luther, to sort of help your tenants apply for this assistance so that the rent is covered for both of you, really.
Right. And part of this, I think, as a landlord, it's really about the patience of understanding the process. I mean, obviously, we're not in the business of evictions. So we're not jumping at the bit to evict people, but it's really understanding the process of working with the tenant and understanding that there may be some short-term delay in getting funds. But because of these guarantees with this program, we will be getting the rents paid.
Well, and Luther, I know we have to let you go. Anything else that you want people to know or understand about either the eventual lifting of this moratorium on evictions or this new money coming in to help folks with rent?
I think, you know, any renter at this point, I think the best thing they could do at this point is if they have any questions is really reach out to your landlord and start the discussion of where you're at. I mean, that's one of the biggest things that we've been doing is really reaching out to all of our tenants, making sure they understand what the moratorium means and how they can get the assistance they need.
Well, Luther, it's been great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Luther Kinney, Director of Property Management for AHEAD, an affordable housing agency in Littleton. Now, coming up after a short break, more specifics on this new housing assistance, because there are a lot of rules around it, and also a broader look at why affordable housing is so hard to come by in the Granite State. All that's coming up, plus more of your questions at 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange@nhpr.org. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
I don't win anything. That's not my thing.
I was shocked because I've never won anything in my life before.
I've never won anything before. That's terrific.
No one ever thinks they're going to win an HPR summer raffle until they do. And this year could be your year. Three early bird winners can choose between $2,000 in gas gift cards or EV charging. And our grand prize winner can choose between $25,000 toward a new car or $20,000 in cash. Get your raffle tickets right now at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, how the economic fallout from the pandemic has affected our state's affordable housing market. Also, what options exist for landlords and tenants now that the moratorium on evictions will soon be lifted. As we're hearing, it's a little more complicated than just that July 1st deadline. Exchange listeners, join our conversation. Are you having trouble paying rent or mortgage or utilities? Landlords, of course, we want to hear from you, too. What are your questions and concerns as the state enters this next phase on rental policy? Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Elliot Berry, Managing Attorney with New Hampshire Legal Assistance, John Manning, Executive Director of Southwestern Community Services, and Alyssa Margolin, Director of Housing Action NH. And John, I want to start with you, but hear from everybody. So a couple basic questions about this $35 million in assistance for housing costs that we talked about a moment ago. John, you said there's no income limit to this, but your struggle has to be related to COVID-19. So just give us a couple examples of what that might mean.
Well, certainly the simple example is if one of the members of the household lost their job or had their hours cut back due to COVID, due to their business being closed, being laid off. It could also mean that they were not able to go to work because they did not have childcare because the schools were closed. It could mean it was because they are in trouble because they've had change in cost, increased costs due to maybe medical bills, anything that they can point directly at something that occurred due to COVID. What will happen is they will sit down and they will talk with a case manager who will go through the process, ask them information on how they got where they are, and then try to put together a plan on getting them whole again, getting them back to where they're not at risk of losing their homes.
And John, it does go directly to the landlord, as was said, or in the case of a mortgage, the bank, or in the case of utilities, to the utility company. Is that the way these programs are typically run, or is that different?
I think for some of our programs, I think Luther mentioned it earlier, we do have programs where we will make payments directly to the person receiving the assistance. Our fuel assistance may go directly to them to help them pay for their oil. We may give them money that they can use for security deposit. This program is different in that it's specifically designed so that the funds are flowing to the landlords or to the third party vendors.
Elliot, what do you think is important to know about this new program for rental assistance?
A couple of things. I think it's easy to confuse the end of the moratorium with eligibility for the assistance. And John will correct me if I'm wrong about this. But I think as long as your housing problem or your non-payment is due to the COVID-related emergency, even if your non-payment occurs, say, in after the moratorium expired, you're still eligible for their assistance going forward. So I think that's really important. And then the other thing is, for tenants out there, simply do not wait until you get a demand for rent or an eviction notice. Get out there and apply for it as soon as you can. One of the things that the governor did in when he declared an end to the moratorium is he extended the period of an eviction notice for non-payment from 7 days to 30 days. And what that does do is give the tenant time to cure the non-payment for a 30-day period instead of a 7-day period. And that gives the idea was to give people time to get over to their local CAP and get the assistance before an eviction gets filed in court.
Because sometimes it takes a little while for the money to flow, Elliot, right? Like it just doesn't, you file on Monday and it comes in on Tuesday. It usually doesn't work quite that quickly.
Sure. You know, and again, John.
Yeah, go ahead, Elliot.
John has a better idea than me about how long that would take.
How long does it take, John?
Our goal with this new program is that we are turning the cash around, the assistance around. We are hoping within a week of when the applicant is has finished giving us the documentation. The goal is to get the funds out as quickly as possible. And as Elliot said, they do not need to already be in a process where they are being evicted. They just need to be behind in their rents. And in fact, the goal is that we can get it so that they don't start the process of eviction for these tenants. We're able to help them cure the rent, accrued rent with the landlord before the landlord does go through that process.
And Alyssa, I read about this assistance again in terms of a $2,500 one-time grant or quote unquote ongoing assistance. What's ongoing assistance? What does that look like and what does someone need to do to get it?
I think that's really an important part to underscore. New Hampshire Housing Relief Program is really thoughtfully designed, but there's been some misunderstanding. Is it just $2,500 grant program or is it rental assistance? And the answer is it's both. And that's why it's so important to work with the CAP agency because they can really identify the best path forward. The $2,500 cap for any household expense that could include a mortgage payment or public utilities might be the right fit for one person experiencing housing instability. But a short-term rental assistance where a portion of your rent is covered for a certain period of time might be a better way, depending on what your situation is.
And what are you hearing from landlords, Alyssa, about this? Obviously, it's new and, you know, we're just looking ahead now. This hasn't really hit the ground yet. But what are you hearing from landlords, Alyssa? Questions, concerns, things they're happy about?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were in the advocacy mode for a long time, you know, making the case to the governor's office for emergency relief and recovery that a program like this was needed. And now we're seeing programs like this roll out in other parts of the country, and Vermont just approved their similar program this week. I think we're fielding a lot of questions on how to direct tenants and how to get the process started. So I think that there is an appreciation from the landlord community that the payments go directly to them. And then there's also an appreciation for the ease, the one-stop website, the access to easy access to the application. And really the CAP agencies have really stepped up here and really took very little time to stand up this program once it was approved by the Gopher.
Well, and again, we keep talking about dates and evictions because, you know, it varies depending on the type of housing that we're talking about. So, Elliot, just to clarify one more time, if someone has received an eviction notice, can they get kicked out even if they applied for assistance because the money hasn't gotten to the landlord yet? I've gotten a sense from all of you that there is some flexibility built within the system, but I just want to make sure that's clear, Elliot. So go ahead.
Yeah, so to the extent that the non-payment is for any part of the period of the COVID emergency, the landlord has to give the tenant a 30-day notice for non-payment. During that 30-day period, the tenant has a right to cure that non-payment and avoid eviction by use of the of any kind of public assistance or, you know, any other payment. One thing that is very important for landlords and tenants to understand is as long as the tenant has a written commitment from a public entity to pay the rent that cures the non-payment, the tenant can't be evicted. So the money doesn't actually have to flow to the landlord during the 30-day period. It would be good if it does. But as long as the public entity makes a written commitment to make the payment, that's good enough to cure the non-payment so the tenant is all set.
Again, I want to remind listeners that you can join us with your questions, either broad thoughts about housing policy or specific questions about how some of this new assistance might work, how the moratorium worked, and some of the dates and deadlines around that. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. And our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you got a short email from Michael, but there is a lot baked into this email. So Michael, thank you for writing. Michael says, out of curiosity, what if someone had used a credit card to avoid non-payment of utilities or rent? Are they eligible for reimbursement? So I think I'm going to throw this to you first, John, at the CAP agency in Keene, the Community Action Program in Keene. Here he is, you know, asking, if people are using credit cards to avoid eviction, once their rental assistance comes in, can they get that payment back? It's a great question, Michael. Thank you. And John, what do you think?
Well, I think the basic goal of this program is that the assistance is paid out to either the landlord or the third party vendors and not paid to the individuals, either reimbursing them or to use the funds to fill in the gaps for themselves. I guess what I would suggest to somebody like that is if they take funds that they have available to pay that credit card, and then they're not able to pay next month's rent, we would be able to assist them with next month's rent again, assuming that it all is based on the COVID emergency and that they would qualify. So the intent, one of the main intents was not to make payments to individuals. But I think the important thing is that we want people to come in and sit down. Every person has to go through a case management process for any assistance they get for this. And the goal of the case managers is going to look at where they are, look at their documentation, and determine what's the best way to assist them. Like Alyssa said, talked a little bit about the one-time grant. That's up to $2,500. And that's if we can look at an individual and see that there was a one-time issue, they had a big cost for some reason, or they were out of work for a short period of time. $25 to $100 will cure their need, and we can see going forward from working with them that they won't need any further assistance, then that's the way we'll go. The second option is the ongoing stabilization, like you asked about, Laura. And that the plan is to look at a longer term goal for these individuals, help them develop a budget. It may mean that we have to pay all of the 2 months or 1 or 2 months in arrears that they have, but then maybe have to assist them with less funds for the next few months until they can get to the point where they're on their feet. Again, that will be something that will be worked through with the case manager that they're working with. And then just so you know, the third part of the program is there are funds that can be used to get folks that are currently in a shelter environment into permanent housing. Shelters, you know, when COVID hit, shelters were just a terrible place to be. Shelters are always a terrible place to be, but with COVID and the concern of having so many people without the ability to self-quarantine or take care of themselves if one of them are ill. So the goal here is to get as many people out of shelters and into permanent housing, and there are funds available to do that also.
Well, and what do you think, Alyssa? Again, Michael's question raises the scenario of people going into debt on their credit cards to avoid eviction. I just wonder what that question, you know, speaks to you about, Alyssa.
Yeah, so I'm glad that Michael, you know, asked that question. I think that the program is designed to deal with the issue of arrearages, and I think John brings up a good approach to how to deal with this. It wanted to make sure you could deal with those arrearages, but also make sure that the funds were going towards that housing cost. So working with your CAP agency and saying, well, perhaps you use the funds that you have to pay the credit card, but if that in turn creates a challenge towards paying next month's rent, you know, finding a solution that fits within the program. I think that, you know, big picture, the pandemic itself has really unveiled the importance of the safety net. And this program in particular, New Hampshire Housing Relief, is designed to start meeting people who may never have accessed the safety net before. I've talked with so many people who've said, I've never been on unemployment before. I've never applied for something like a PPP loan. And this is designed also to serve those who might be new to asking for a little help. And these are unusual situations. And that's why it's good that the CAPs have so much experience in the housing space, because they can really help you navigate it and kind of create a solution, even if there are some, design issues in the program to overcome. I think the CAP agencies can really direct people to make sure that they meet the ultimate goal, and that is you get to stay in your home.
Well, coming up, we will look more at policies around New Hampshire's affordable housing supply and why it's so scarce. We'll look at some of the changes that may be happening at the federal level. We'll look at some of the changes that may be happening at the local level, especially with the legislature just closing out its session. And we'll take a lot more of your questions, so keep them coming in. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. And our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour, our state's affordable housing market and what options exist for landlords and tenants, given that the moratorium on evictions is lifting or will soon be lifted, depending on the status of the rental property. Also, there is a new fund coming onto the market to help people pay their rent. We're hearing about that as well. And listeners, let's hear from you. If you are worried about paying rent or utilities, or if you're a landlord, what's been your experience with the moratorium and now the new housing assistance? Again, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call in 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Elliot Berry, managing attorney with New Hampshire Legal Assistance, John Manning, executive director of Southwestern Community Services, and Alyssa Margolin, director of Housing Action NH. And all of you, we had a caller who couldn't stay on the line named Jack from Manchester, who was at work and had to jump off the line. Jack said, I'm listening, but I'm concerned people who need this information won't be able to get it because they are not listening to the show, because they are homeless or working right now. It's a great question, Jack, and there is so much important information that all three of you have imparted, but Jack's absolutely right. Some people are working or they're really struggling and they're on the streets and they obviously can't be listening to the radio right now. So, Elliot, to you first, how do you get the word out to people who need this help the most?
Every way we can. We have, NHLA has a website. The CAPS have websites. We have done a lot of webinars on this topic. All of our offices, you know, even though we're largely closed, all of our offices have signs directing people for the help. It just, I'm not much on media personally, being an old guy, but but we really are trying to flood the community with the important information. But
well, and I know, yeah, Elliot, I know you guys at New Hampshire Legal Assistance, and you're in charge of the, you know, the Housing Justice Project. There are people, Jack's so right, who are in difficult situations with their housing, but they're not digital. They can't afford a smartphone, or they're older, or English might not be their first language. I'm thinking of my parents. They are definitely not digital. They don't have a smartphone. So what about those folks, Elliot? Is there just an old-fashioned phone number that people can call and get assistance?
Yeah. From certainly at New Hampshire Legal Assistance and the Legal Advice and Referral Center, you can definitely call us. The 211 is the, and again, John may correct me, but I think 211 is the ultimate. If you just can't get, you know, through to CAP, definitely call them. And hopefully that will do it. But I share all the concerns that you just articulated. And I think it's really going to be a challenge for the CAPS to be able to accommodate the folks who can't make online application.
Yeah, there's just such an assumption that, you know, go online and do it. And not everybody in the world has that capability. So, John, I want to hear from you, too.
Yeah, Elliot's right. 211 is certainly, if anybody is looking for information on this program, if they call 211, they will refer them to their local community action agency. Again, either online or certainly by phone, they can make the call and start the process that way. The community action agencies statewide have done and continue to do a tremendous amount of outreach on this program. We've reached out to, we've done mailings to a broad range of landlords, folks who aren't normally used to dealing with the community action agency. We've tried to reach out with all the local welfare offices. So if someone is reaching out to their local town welfare for assistance, they will know to refer them. I think that we are trying to get the word out as broadly as we can, because we do recognize our clientele is generally one that may not be connected to the internet or have access to technology in the good times of pre-COVID. So we acknowledge and have tried to make sure that there are alternative ways that folks can go through this process if they don't have that access.
Well, and I want to let everybody know that we do have a frequently asked question sheet on our website, again, nhpr.org/exchange, nhpr.org/exchange. Frequently asked questions, but also links to agencies like your agency, John. So if listeners want to look at that or spread the word, again, nhpr.org/exchange. We also have a Spanish language information sheet there as well as we talk about language barriers. More emails from our listeners. This is great to hear from everybody. Michelle writes in from Peterborough. I recently purchased my first home, Michelle says. I work in school-age childcare in the public school, and I was furloughed in mid-March. I have been able to pay my mortgage and bills because of the extra $600 from the CARES Act. Michelle says, I hope to go back to work in September, but without the extra $600 in August, I won't be able to make my September mortgage payment. Michelle says, I do not want to fall behind on my payments. Will I be one to fall through the cracks because I only need a little bit of help? Alyssa, I'm going to throw that to you first because she's raising a point that has been raised and that I know you're going to talk about in a few minutes with Senator Shaheen after the show is over. We're nearing the end of some of this federal assistance, the stimulus checks, the unemployment insurance and so forth. What about people like Michelle who are almost making it but need a little bit of help?
Yeah, we definitely made a case to the governor's office for emergency relief and recovery that we needed a standalone foreclosure prevention program. So we haven't seen that yet, but what we do know is that the program that John has been talking about, New Hampshire Housing Relief, and can cover a mortgage payment. So it's that, remember we talked about, there were kind of two sides of this program. There was that grant side that could cover household expenses up to $2,500. And then there was the larger short-term rental assistance side. It sounds like Michelle, that she might look into that grant side to deal with the mortgage issue at this time until we hear anything further on a more comprehensive foreclosure prevention program.
And perhaps, John, she should also visit her local community action agency. And in Peterborough, would that fall under you, John, or would that be someone else? You're in the Southwestern office. Yeah.
That would be Southern New Hampshire Services. They cover all the way over to Peterborough. She should definitely contact her local community action agency. Again, like Alyssa said, the goal here is that folks do not get into a hole they can't get out of. And this one-time fund, I think, would be something that might make sense for her. She cannot pay her August payment because she's not going back to work till September. So we would be able to assist her with that. And because of the fact that, assuming she's going back to work in September, she'll be back on track. We can look at it and say, yep, the one-time assistance is what she needs, and then she should be able to move forward on her own.
All right. Well, Michelle, I'm glad you wrote in. And let's take a call. This is Paul in Meredith. Hi, Paul. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call.
And, sure.
I hope there are people out there that are in the same boat as me, and they'll be happy that I took a moment to speak up for them. So I fall into this group of new small business owners who are investing so much into their business that by the, you know, when I do my taxes, it's like I'm making so little, right? Like I net so little because, you know, everything goes right back into the business that I didn't qualify for unemployment because I didn't net $4,000 in the most recent, you know, quarter or whatever. So, which I think is really common for people in my boat and business owners. I'm a carpenter, by the way. So, you know, we're constantly having to buy new tools, fix our truck. Like it just goes on and on and on. So the business like soaks up all our money. And so, you know, I didn't qualify. So I was missed by the CARES Act. I got a $12,000 check. And meanwhile, like I can't even stop. I had to keep working. You know, I'm staying super busy. So we just had to keep jamming, you know, cause we couldn't even take, it's hard to even take a few minutes to call your show right now, you know?
Sure. Wow.
So yeah, you know, we're hustling, you know, we're like these working class people. I think there are tons of us, you know, self-employed people, who have to, you know, own a lot of tools for their trade and, are trying to grow.
And well, so, and I know construction's really busy. You said $12,000 check. You mean $1,200 check, right?
Oh, sorry. Paul? Did I say $12,000? I meant $1,200. I meant the stimulus.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
You know, and certainly COVID hit us hard, you know, anybody who didn't just completely ignore, you know, the sort of science, we, of course, we couldn't like crew, you know, the work we had planned with other crews and in people's houses and stuff. And so we were left on our own to just like fend and try to adapt. And I, you know, I took a few, it took a few weeks, and I did. I got, all of a sudden I got all these deck jobs, and I've got all this other stuff I'm working on. So I'm back. We've adapted, and I am staying really busy, but I definitely took a hit. And I wonder if like this rent, since I didn't, people like me didn't get any help from the CARES Act really, except for $1,200, if we will be, if this program is maybe something that could help us in a different realm, because I had to, yeah, it was tough to make, it's been tough to make rent. You know, it was tough to make rent during the pandemic.
Wow. So I'm really glad that you called, because we've heard a lot about new small business owners, self-employed people. Their cases don't really fit into these boxes that programs generally have set up. And John, this is a tricky case. I want to throw it to you. He's working, he's busy, but boy, it's been a struggle. And, you know, he's got some concerns about housing as well. So go ahead, John.
Well, I think he's a good example of how they tried to make this program broad enough to assist folks that didn't necessarily fit into the small little common block. If his business was impacted by COVID, either he didn't have as big a jobs, it took him a while to start doing the jobs. If he had an impact on his income based on COVID, and because of that impact, his business is not able to pay him enough money so that he can pay his housing costs, then this program can assist him, can help him catch up on his rent if that's the case, or some of his other housing costs. The one thing we can't do is give him money into his business. That is the other programs that I know they're coming out with, one for self-employed individuals that's currently open, but if because of this impact on his business, he's not able to pay his rent or mortgage or housing costs, then he's certainly someone that can come in and talk to us.
Well, and Paul, I hope you get a chance to listen next week, or you can write us before then, because we're going to have the Deputy Commissioner of New Hampshire Employment Security on. I think it's Tuesday, and we're going to talk about some of the new programs for self-employed people or small businesses like yours, Paul. So, you know, stay tuned to NHPR and definitely write us if you've got some questions about that. Here's an email from Gary in Sugar Hill that came in earlier that I want to share with all of you. Gary says, the cost of living for low-income workers far exceeds their available income. Gary says, all costs, food, clothing, housing, utilities, cars, education, etc., have doubled or more, while the minimum wage and low-income job wages have been flat for decades. Gary says, we are looking at the problem backwards. We don't need low-income housing. We need higher-income wages. Gary, it is a great question that you ask, and maybe I'll turn to you first, Elliot, but Alyssa, you too. Are we barking up the wrong tree here? Instead of worrying about, you know, rental assistance and helping people cover the costs, we should just pay them more. What do you think, Elliot?
I think not. If you look historically in America, at least in the 20th century, the private market has never provided enough housing for low-income people to be able to afford. I would love it if the minimum wage were doubled. It would sure help. But I think the supply and demand problem is so out of whack that for a long, long time, we're going to need a lot more federally subsidized housing. And for low-income people, we don't have a program now from the federal government that subsidizes the construction of new housing that's affordable to low-income people. So this is a major problem, and I think that only Washington is going to be able to make progress on.
Well, that's interesting. And Alyssa and John, right after this show, speaking of Washington, you will be on a conference call with Senator Shaheen about housing policy, about the moratorium, about this new assistance. Alyssa, to you first, what are you hoping to hear from Senator Shaheen?
Well, we're hoping to report to Senator Shaheen the progress we've made with the CARES Act funds for housing here in New Hampshire, but I'm also going to talk with Senator Shaheen about the supply problem. And this is very much related to Gary's point. You know, is it should we blame the wages, or, you know, what really is the issue here? And we just can't get around the fact that here in New Hampshire, we have a lack of supply. And so we just don't have enough affordable units. And that really does drive up the cost of housing. So a healthy vacancy rate in the rental market is supposed to be between 4% and 5%. We have a vacancy rate nationwide of 7% and in New England of about 4%. In New Hampshire, our vacancy rate is 0.75%. So one of the challenges with housing instability is there's really no choice. There's nowhere to go. And so if we don't deal with the supply side problem, we'll continue to see rising costs, and it'll continue to be this hostile market for folks. So we will be talking to Senator Shaheen about this supply issue and making the case that the stimulus package, if Congress does decide to move forward with that, includes something to deal with this pipeline issue that we really do need to address.
John, how about you? You'll be on the call as well with the senator. What are you going to say? What are you hoping to hear?
I think that Alyssa kind of hit the nail on the head. We need more funding for affordable housing. We need more funding for workforce housing, senior housing, because the availability is so small. So that's one of the things we're going to be looking for. I think going back to the last comment that you received, there's a lot of folks that are struggling even without COVID, even before COVID. This particular housing relief program was designed specifically to assist those that were in trouble because of the COVID pandemic. But just keep in mind and let your listeners keep in mind, the community action agencies have a lot of other funds and programs that can assist them if they are in trouble and it's not related to COVID. So if they need assistance with housing in general, with food, with any other kinds of services that they're not quite sure what to do with, they should certainly reach out to their local community action agency. What can be done.
And I'm going to wrap it up there with all of you, but I want to remind everybody that we also have links, resources on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. John, thank you very much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Laura.
John Manning with Southwestern Community Services. Alyssa, good to have you too.
Thank you.
Alyssa Margolin with Housing Action NH. And Elliot Berry, thanks for your time.
My pleasure.
Elliot Berry with New Hampshire Legal Assistance. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.